At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
A warmer from the bow. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Cusco Soups with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, now a part of the Beeson Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. As joining me in segment number two, Tanner Kern of DraftKings. You have seen him many times on the Greg Peterson Experience on Beeson Esports Betting Network, which is now from 6 to 8 Pacific. That would be Eastern Time, 9 to 11, so we're a little bit earlier on during the day, which means I can give you more full recaps on this podcast, and he's going to be joining me. We're going to be taking a look at what we're all getting on Friday, a few teams that he's a little bit bullish slash bearish on in general, and some of the things that he's been taking away recently from college basketball, and I'm also going to ask him about how he gauges these back-to-backs in the Ivy League as well. So we're going to have a great time chatting with him in segment number two. In the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one or two ways to be able to throw those in. First one is my Twitter / X timeline at GNN_D1. Keep in mind, letters CM, naming does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did not get in any Twitter / X questions today, but we did have a bulldozer just continuing to bulldoze in college basketball. Let's take a look back at everything that we saw yesterday, try to find some trends, and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
I mean, we could easily lead with Florida Atlantic, Purdue, but how about this team being 23-3 against the spread? Minnesota, the state with the smallest drinks in the union, gets the job done again, 88-79. This line went from being 3.5 down to about 3 to 2.5. I have no idea why they got faded, but they went 8 of 19 from 3-point range, this Minnesota team did. Elijah Hawkins, he was able to go off for 24 points, 7 assists, and under Jake Diebler, Ohio State has been able to give you a better effort. They shoot north of 50% from the floor, but they were catching a little bit of a falling knife with the way that this Minnesota team has been playing at home. Minnesota wins a rebound battle 32-26 with Dawson Garcia chipping in there, 22 points, 9 rebounds. So Minnesota, yay verily, another massive cover for them. And while this team is not quite as good against the spread as Minnesota, you've been able to make quite a bit of money all season long on Purdue. Purdue, they're able to get the job done, go to 15-10-2 against the spread against Rutgers. 96-68 the final. Rutgers has been playing about 2/3 of their games to the under the season. This was not one of them, as Purdue went 12-23 from 3, and this is a Rutgers team giving up darn near 20 points more per 100 possessions in a roadside shoot court venue rather than at home. And for Rutgers, they just couldn't get a lot going in this game. They lose a rebound battle by kind of 35-22. Zach Edey, 25 points, 7 boards, goes 11 of 11 at the free throw line. For Purdue, they play even up with regards to turnovers, but when you win the rebound battle like that, and when you shoot nearly 59% from the floor, yeah, that's going to be an issue. You know what else is an issue? Is if you're betting on Michigan, they are now 7-20 against the spread. They lose to Northwestern by a count of 76-62. They were about a 12.5 to a 13-point underdog, and for Northwestern, they've been pretty solid without Ty Berry thus far, though the competition in this one was not great, and Michigan loses this game shooting 8 of 11 from 3-point range. I mean, my goodness, you had Nabari Burnett actually go 3 of 5 from 3. Chips in their 15 points, but for Michigan, they've just been so inefficient on the defensive side of things. They allowed Northwestern to go 10 of 22 from 3. They only generated 5 turnovers. This was a game that went under, but that's just because you had such few possessions in this game. This was one of the slowest games I've seen all season long. So Michigan, they go down in a fiery heap once again, but this team is starting to be able to build themselves up a little bit more once again. Florida Atlantic, they get a nice win and cover over SMU, this by a count of 80-70, and for Florida Atlantic, they were able to get another very nice performance out of Elijah Martin, 20 points, goes 3 of 8 from 3, was able to chip in their 7 boards. For Florida Atlantic, they were able to do a nice job of being able to control the glass. They win that battle 43-37, and for SMU, this has been a very good cover rate team for y'all season long, 14-11-1 against the spread, but they go just 6 of 22 from 3-point range in this affair. Even though SMU was able to do a solid job in terms of the turnover battle, they lose that battle by a count of 9-8. Just not enough to be able to hold in there and be able to get a cover on this night. Now, I'm doing this as some of the West Coast games are just starting to come to an end. This one is one that just went final. Oregon, they knock off Samford. This is a game that went under. There's about 30 seconds remaining, and Oregon is up by a count of 78-63. So we know what happened here. But for Samford, they had been shooting 43.5% from 3-point range at home in a road/shoot-court venue. They were shooting more like 33% from 3, and it caught up to them. Their home splits, they weren't able to bear out in this one, going 8 of 27 from 3, as you were able to get a nice double-double for Oregon out of Mfali Tonte, 13 points, 11 boards, and Oregon goes 12 of 25 from 3-point range. A combined 39 points from Jackson Shelset, Alon Jadari, and Tracy. These guys were absolutely on fire in this one, as for Samford, they play even up with regards to their turnovers, but lose the battle on the glass, 38-31. Good result for Oregon in that one. And how about we mention one of your other top cover teams in all of college basketball? Because Minnesota, very clearly, is number one. And number two has actually been Texas A&M Corpus Christi. They have been a moneymaker for y'all season long, but Troy also has been. That was not the case on Thursday, though. As for Troy, they do fall to Arkansas State, this by a count of 79-71. And you want to talk about teams with very demonstrative home and road splits, it is Arkansas State. But Troy now 17-7-1 against the spread for the Trojans. They go 7-19 from 3-point range, but Arkansas State, they went 12 of 26 from 3, and Arkansas State went 20 of 25 at the free throw line and win despite the fact that they lost that turnover battle 19-13 because Troy did get a little bit bludgeoned on the glass, 38-30. Arkansas State was able to win that battle. Arizona, they have been a very good cover 8 team all season long, and I'm recording this as the game is starting to go final. You got about 7 minutes remaining, but unless if something very extreme happens here, they are going to be falling to 17-9 against the spread as Washington State, as I record this, up by a count of 60-57. And for this Washington State team, it's really an incredible team that has been able to turn it on here towards the back half of the season. I really like what I'm seeing out of them. As of right now, they've held Arizona in the first 33 minutes to shoot just 4 of 16 from 3. Now, Arizona's also went 11 of 20 at the free throw line to be able to help out here, but just 6 turnovers in the first 33 minutes for Washington State. You've been able to have a pair of guys in Isaac Jones along Jalen Wells step up for a combined 30 points. I really like what I'm seeing out of them, so that has been a very nice sign just in general. We had a lot of Colonial action that went down on Thursday as well. Actually, Coastal action, they changed the name, and Stony Brook, they have been one of those teams that has been able to cover all season long. They take down North Carolina A&T by a count of 80-64, and as 14.5 points favorites, they just barely are able to get this one to the window. They were up like 24 points with nearly 4 minutes remaining, and they very nearly blew this one, but for North Carolina A&T, they were able to get back their top scorer in Landon Glasper. He goes for 16 points on 17 shots, but your main facilitator in Cayman Shell, he only lasted 7 minutes in this game. It looks like he went down with some sort of an apparent injury, and for Stony Brook, you got Tyler Stevenson, more give you more with 28 points. The Stony Brook team has been quite undervalued all season long, and they were able to cash another ticket for you on Thursday. Another team has been pretty undervalued all season long. How about what you've been able to get out of Monmouth thus far this season? And for Monmouth, they are currently sitting 17-10-1 against the spread, but ticket on the chin to a Towson team has also been pretty solid. They're 15-11-1 against the spread. Towson gets a win by a count of 80-61. For Monmouth, they do go 8 of 20 from 3-point range, but they were just killed on the glass. 43-24. Towson wins that battle on the glass, so they were really able to exert their will, and They were able to get that one in. A team that's been very solid for you in terms of covering as well, except if you've been fading them, because this team has not been able to make you a lot of money all season long. Hofstra, they were able to get it done against Drexel by a count of 69-57. They're now 11-16 against the spread at Hofstra throughout the year. So it's actually been one of your best cover eight teams in all of college basketball. It's not been the case this season, but a very good result for them. Another very interesting team in general has been Oakland. Oakland is actually now 19-10 against the spread. It doesn't feel like it, but they have been able to cover a lot of numbers for you. And for Oakland, they win a 63-43 slog against Robert Morris, in which both teams just could not put the ball in the basket. And Robert Morris goes 17 of 60 from the floor, and Robert Morris took two free throws on their home floor while Oakland took 24. That's interesting to say the least. And for Oakland, they won the rebound battle by a count of 46-37 with Trey Thompson being able to supply 22 points, 17 rebounds. So he had more than half of Robert Morris's output all by himself. That was a game that put college basketball back to the dark ages, and this team has been very fadeable, and they continue to be fadeable. That would be old Detroit Mercy, and oh mercy, it has not been good for them. As for Detroit, they get absolutely pounded by a count of 93-78 on their home floor by Wright State. As for Detroit, against the spread, they've been able to kick it up a little bit more, but this is still a unit that is only covering about 37.5% of their games. For Detroit, 8-21 against the spread, so more like 27.5% of their games. You had Wright State in this one go 11 of 25 from three. Meanwhile, for Detroit, 3 of 13 from distance. And on the Wright State front, by the way, they have been one of your best over teams in all of college basketball. 20 overs, 6 unders. That is actually the best mark in all of college basketball. And the second best mark, that now belongs to Denver, the Pioneers. They've been looking at Pioneer covers all season long, and it's been up and down for them this season. And Denver, they took it on the chin in this one, 97-70 against South Dakota State, but they were able to get you that over, as this total was right around 165.5, so high total. They do just enough to be able to help you out there. As for South Dakota State, they go 12 of 28 from three-point range. They were absolutely able to light it up, as you had all but one of your starters be able to supply double figures for South Dakota State. So Denver, not terrific on that front. Another team has been pretty terrific in terms of being able to cash you overs thus far this season. That'd be our good friends over there at Radford. They're now 18 overs to 8 unders, and for Radford, they were able to come out with a very inspired effort against Gardner-Webb. 90-74 the final for Radford. They go 5 of 13 from 3-point range, but really made their hay down low. They were able to win the rebound battle by a count of 40-39, and for Radford, they win the turnover battle 12-7. This has been a Gardner-Webb team that they themselves are now 17 overs to 8 unders thus far this season as well. Both of these teams have seen a little bit of a tempo shift, and for Gardner-Webb, they go just 9 of 33 from 3-point range. So that was rough to say the least. The OVC has been a haven for unders, and the directional Illinois schools have been your best under teams all season long. You had both of these teams on Thursday, though, go over the total, as Western Illinois 18 unders to 6 overs. They play an over against Morehead State by a count of 78-57. This was a closing total of 128.5 for this Western Illinois bunch. They just had no response for Riley Minix, who had himself a night. 30 points, 15 rebounds. Jordan Lathan, he has 25 points. So between the two of them, they were able to supply 55 points for Morehead State. Meanwhile, for Western Illinois, they go just 19 of 62 from the floor. Meanwhile, Eastern Illinois, they were able to hold in there against Tennessee State. They are able to get a cover, but they do not get the win. 78-73 the final. You had some late game fouling in this one, but this was a total that was well below 140, so this was going to be going over regardless. And for Eastern Illinois, they do go 9 of 17 from 3-point range. Meanwhile, for Tennessee State, the 18 points of E.J. Bellinger able to bail them out for an outright win. You had a lot of your just traditional under teams actually go over on Thursday, by the way. Vermont has been one of your best under teams, 18 unders to just 8 overs as far this season, but they were able to pound the tar out of Albany, 94-80 the final for Vermont. A bottom 30 team in terms of total possessions per game. They shot 55.5% from the floor, and they go 22 of 28 the free throw line. And to the credit of Albany, they do go 11 of 25 from 3-point range, but Albany loses the rebound battle 32-26. They lose the turnover battle 13-10 as well, so that was a little bit of an issue for them. Another team has been very rock solid in terms of being able to cash you unders as far this season. That has been the old Thundering Herd of Marshall, but the Thundering Herd of Marshall, well, they have been thundering to a lot of losses recently. On Wednesday, they lost to James Madison by a count of 84-58, so they were able to cash you a nice under out there in Rutgers, by the way. even though their game did go over on Thursday. They are now at 17 unders to 9 overs, so they've been one of the better teams in all of college basketball on that front. But you also have another team that was in action that has been very good in terms of catching these unders. That would be the old Sharks of LIU. They now have played 16 unders, 9 overs, and they've had a push thrown in there along the way. Long Island, they get the win against Lemoyne, 76-64. They were pretty sizable underdogs. This was a total that was north of 140, so you were able to get an under there as Eric Acker was able to supply Long Island with 28 points. And Long Island has honestly not been the world's worst against the spread record team as far as this season. I'm not saying that they've been amazing or anything like that, but the fight that we have been seeing out of second-year coach Rod Strickland, it has been very refreshing to see. They're now 15-11 against the spread, though Central Connecticut has actually been your best cover team out in this conference. They are now 15-9 against the spread. Central Connecticut goes on the road, and they take down Wagner by a count of 73-72. This essentially closed as a pick'em. Central Connecticut was the betting line favorite to start out with, and this was just an absolute run by them, because for Wagner, they get up by a count of 32-12 very early on in this game. Central Connecticut erases a 20-point deficit to be able to get the job done outright, and they very nearly blew a 65-58 lead. They were up by that count with less than 2.5 minutes remaining, and our DK and our Greta pick. You knew that I was going to bring this up. Boy, oh boy. Talk about pulling one out from the great beyond. Arizona State plus 2.5 looked like it was dead, and by dead, I mean dead. They were down in this game by a count of 49-24. They force overtime. Washington gets the job done outright by a count of 84-82, but a write-up record is back to 22 games above 500. As for Washington, they go 16-26 at the free throw line. They were not good on that front. For Arizona State, Frankie Collins put the team on his back, 21 points, 8 boards, 3 steals, what we'd like to see, and Jose Perez off the bench, he was able to give the team 15 points as well. So we love to see that, and for Cal, win but no cover for them. They take down Oregon State by a count of 81-73, and Oregon State has been a very fascinating team all season long. They've actually been able to cash for you thus far this season quite a few overs. A lot of that has been due to overtime, but 16 overs to 9 unders for them. Meanwhile, Cal, 16 overs to 10 unders for them. For Oregon State, they actually go 10 of 25 from three-point range in this one. Meanwhile, Cal, 16 of 33 from distance, with Fardos Amick supplying 21 points, 11 rebounds. Meanwhile, you were able to have Tyler Bledsoe be able to step up for Oregon State, 18 points, 10 rebounds. And if you're taking a look at this great game of college basketball right now and what we're seeing trend-wise, it has been a rough season in general for home underdogs, hitting at just 48.8%, 613, 644, and 20 against the spread. Meanwhile, overs, they continue to be overwhelming. They lead unders by 100, 2,313 overs, 2,213 unders. And if you look at just the last 7 days in college basketball, home underdogs, 44-61 against the spread, while unders are having a pretty good run, 167 unders to 162 overs. So that's what we're seeing in college basketball right now, and that's what we all got on Thursday. Now let's take a look at Friday, and let's take a look at just how to gauge some of these Northeastern teams, get the feel from Tanner Kern as to some of the teams that he's bullish and bearish on right now. Tanner does tremendous work over at DraftKings, and he joins me next right here on Cusco Soup with myself, David Peterson, now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
And we're back here, Love You Las Vegas, for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It is great to be joined by this man. As if you're a frequent listener slash viewer of the Greg Peterson Experience, you know this guy very well. It's Tanner Kern. He does absolutely tremendous work over at DraftKings. I know he does a great job over at Forbes as well, along with being one half of the Ride the Line podcast. He and Grant Mitchell do a great job with that podcast, Tanner. He does a little bit of everything, football, basketball, baseball, hockey, you name it. He is an expert in it all, and you're able to follow him on Twitter slash X at his first and last name, Tanner Kern, last name spelled K-E-R-N, and then an underscore after that. And Tanner, always great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Greg, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Tanner. And Tanner, we've got an interesting Friday. You're out there in the northeast part of the country, so you know these teams very well. But before we get into, let's call it what it is, a smaller slate than what we're going to be getting with 100 million billion games for Saturday. Are there a few teams in general that you've been identifying the last few weeks that could be playing on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, a little bit further down the line that either you've had great success fading them or you've had a lot of success being able to place some bets on them and them come through for you?
Well, until obviously the Creighton downfall, I've been high on UConn, still high on UConn. I think they're going to come out this weekend and find a way to dominate. But looking at the Huskies, just a very well-rounded team there with Tristan Newton, Donovan Klingon. You know, Klingon was the big reason I think that they didn't have that success against Creighton because he got into foul trouble early and he really sets the tone down low for them. So the combination of him along with Newton, just how well Newton played in that game against Creighton, I think that makes me really excited about UConn moving forward. I'm also pretty high on Purdue based on what they've done. I mean, when you look at them in the KenPom rankings, they've been sensational, right? Second in adjusted offense and then 20th in adjusted defense. They're very efficient on both sides of the ball. Obviously, Zach Edey down low, he's been fantastic, one of the best players in college basketball. So I'm high on the teams that are pretty high up on the list. I also really like Duke a lot with Kyle Filipowski. They've been very good as well and very good to me as a bettor. So those will be the three teams that I'm looking at going into the NCAA tournament that I'm pretty high on.
Yep, and with Duke, you mentioned Kyle Filipowski. My goodness, the game that he and the Duke Blue Devils had against Miami, that was big. Granted, there was no Nigel Pack in that game, but certainly were able to make a statement there. Unfortunately, when it comes to the ACC, they will not be shining on Friday, but we are going to be seeing a lot of Metro Atlantic. We're going to be seeing quite a bit of action out there in the Ivy League. And before we do take a look at some of those Ivy League games, I do want to ask you about this. How do you just handicap an Ivy League that, as we know, they play these back-to-backs when it's in conference? They're really the lone conference that does it. We had a lot of that when it came to that COVID 2020-2021 year, but it's been a tradition unlike any other in the Ivy League. And I do find it to be a little bit tricky because while you are certainly going to be handicapping the Friday games when it comes to Thursday night into Friday morning, and then obviously after that you handicap the Saturday games, I do feel like it's a little bit more lumped together because some of these teams, they do come off of that game on Friday, and then they're either a little bit more flat for Saturday, or I've noticed that from time to time, there are some look-ahead spots where a team might be leaving a little bit in the tank for Friday, so that way they're able to get like a big Saturday win when they play against one of these top teams like Princeton, Yale, the big dogs.
Yeah, so the first thing I look at, obviously, is just how I normally break down a game. Looking at the normal stats, looking at the KenPom rankings, seeing how teams have played as of late and their momentum going into it. But in the Ivy League, you also have to look at no rest. So that's another stat. You look at like Penn, Yale, Harvard. They have not been the best teams against the spread in a back-to-back situation. Princeton's been fantastic. They're 2-0 against the spread. So that's the kind of things to look at. I mean, I don't really venture too far outside of what I normally do, but I'm also going to take a look at, okay, when they've been in these situations, how have they performed?
Yep, I think that that's so massive to do, and there are splits for that as well, and when you're able to identify some of those splits, look at a strong point and a weak point, I think that that's such a good tool. Joining me on the show, we do have Tanner Kern, who does great work over at DraftKings, joining me right here on Cusco Soups, and we're talking about splits, and one of the teams that have been so interesting with regards to their splits is Niagara. Niagara has yet to lose a game this calendar year on the road. They are going to be hitting the road against Canisius as 1.5-point underdogs. Total on this game is 143. How do you break down not just this game, but along those lines? Because we were just talking about splits with regards to no rest a second ago. How you take a look at the Niagara road splits, because this team has been so much better on the road rather than at home, and it's very much a rarity, but you do get like one or two of these teams every year in college basketball.
And you need to ride them too. When you get the teams that can win on the road in college basketball, it is massive. You know, looking at Niagara, what they've been able to do on the road is very impressive because we see it all the time in college basketball. Teams struggle to win on the road. So finding that team is huge, and Niagara is definitely one of them in this spot. I mean, going against Canisius have not been the best basketball team in the world by any means. They have won two of their past three games, but looking at Niagara, they've won four of their past five. Both teams pretty even on the defensive side of the floor, but I do like Niagara when it comes to their offense. Ahmad Henderson's been very good, just a young freshman, 12.9 points per game. The efficiency hasn't necessarily been there, but the thing that I've noticed about Niagara, they really turn that defensive efficiency up and that defensive intensity up when they need to down the stretch in games. They're finding ways to win, especially on the road. So I would take them here in the spot.
Yep, this Niagara team has been so good at just being able to develop good offense, and their three-point shooting on the road is right in that neighborhood of about 41%. They have been tremendous when they've hit the road all season long. So I do agree with you there. As Tanner Kern, who does tremendous work over at DraftKings, he is joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. And we were just talking about the Ivy League a second ago, and I do think that we've got some very fascinating games when it comes to this Friday, and I would say this one is the biggest one in my opinion. It's Cornell playing against Yale. Yale has been a bulldozer in the Ivy League thus far, but they do find themselves as a slim 2-point underdog with a total of 155.5. How do you evaluate a game where Yale, they've really been bearing down on defense. This team has been very great on that side of the ball really since beginning of the month of December. And then you've got a Cornell team that they're looking running and gunning, and they're looking to get this game the 80s.
Yeah, so I would probably lean towards Cornell at home in the last meeting between these two teams. Yale did pull off a 2-point win. So right there, it's very tough to beat a team twice in the Ivy League, especially when you've got two of the best teams in the Ivy League going at it in Cornell. Yale here, looking at Cornell, I think the offense is going to take them over the edge here. They play fast. They're very efficient. And that's what I think we're going to see out of them. They need to run the floor fast in this game. And I think in the last one, too, down the stretch, they really allowed Yale to dictate the pace of the game. I think they're going to have a much more successful time at home in this spot. Now, Yale's defense is something to be concerned about here, but, you know, they did show some, you know, weaknesses against Princeton, giving up 73 points and finding a way to, you know, get blown out, not blown out in that game, but they lost by double digits. And that's something that we really haven't seen from Yale too much, obviously being 8-1 in the Ivy League. The biggest player that you need to stop for Yale, he's been sensational, Danny Wolf. Under the hoop, he can deliver. He had 25 points last time out against Cornell. If he has 25 points in this game, it's probably going to go towards Yale here, but look for Cornell to really emphasize him down low and try to take away aspects of his game, because if you shut down Danny Wolf, you give yourself a really good chance to win.
Danny Wolf has been so versatile. Guy stands right around 7 feet tall. He's able to pop it from three. He's able to give you 9 rebounds. So I do think that that's very big. And I mean, you mentioned Danny Wolf for Yale. On the flip side, you've got a Cornell team that I always like to call it a whole is greater than the sum of its parts approach for them, because you have a team averaging north of 80 points per contest and nobody averages more than like 12.5 points per contest. So I do find that to be very intriguing. And I also do find this spot to be very intriguing. We've got the old Princeton versus Harvard game. Lots of well-educated gentlemen in this one. Princeton finds themselves as a 7 to 7.5 point favorite. Total's 140. How do you evaluate a matchup like this with a Princeton team that they don't do a whole bunch as super flashy, but as I like to call it, they just do the little things well with hitting free throws, not turning the ball over, and go figure, team out there in the Ivy League, they're playing smart basketball.
Yeah, I mean, smart basketball wins games. That's what it comes down to. And making free throws, too. Like, you know, we talked about winning on the road. Another thing in college basketball is identifying those teams that make free throws, because there are so many opportunities that are missed because the teams just can't deliver at the charity strike. So that's one reason that you should be on Princeton consistently this season. But looking at this game specifically for Princeton here, they have a lot going for them, especially when it comes to their defense. I mean, their defense is just significantly better than Harvard. Harvard's been more of an average team, especially, you know, in the Ivy League, they're 4-5, so a little under average. And they have not been playing consistent basketball, right? They're very up and down, where Princeton has won four straight games and just have a bunch of guys that can deliver. I really like Xavier Lee. He's been fantastic. Young sophomore there, 18 points per game, shooting 47% from the field. That's another thing that you don't see in college basketball a lot. Guys that, especially in the mid-major programs, guys that are taking a ton of shots and finding ways to be very efficient. He's been fantastic. Also really like, when it comes to being under the hoop, Caden Pierce, 15 points per game, 9.4 rebounds. Again, averaging a double-double in the Ivy League is not easy, and he's been able to do that. So I do think Princeton laying the points here is the move. I think their defense will wear Harvard down, and then when it comes down to it, I trust their offense a lot more than Harvard's too.
Yep, I do as well. And then I want to take a look at this game with you, as Tanner Kerner does tremendous work over at DraftKings. He is joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. I know you went to school pretty close to this area. It's the old Fairfield versus Quinnipiac game. Quinnipiac at home is a 2-point favorite. Total on this game is 158.5. How do you identify a spot like this? Because I do take a look at this game. And by the way, the opener on the total is 159.5. And fully recognize that Fairfield has been much better on offense, but this does feel like a little bit too high of a total in a spot where last time these teams hooked up, I do think that it's going to be a higher scoring game, but it was 66-64.
Yeah, so Greg, actually, I am a Quinnipiac journalism alum for
yes,
my
master. Yes, sir.
So I do like the Bobcats in the spot, but looking at the total here, it's very high based on what we saw last time. I think, you know, it was combined for 130 points.
130.
Yeah, so it was not a high-scoring game, and it came down to defense. And this is a game that Quinnipiac, honestly, they have the team to dominate it because of their ability in the paint. I do think it's going to be close, but if Fairfield can't make shots early, it just gives Quinnipiac so many chances on the glass. I mean, they dominated the rebounding battle last time against Fairfield. Fairfield did win on the offensive glass, but overall, the Bobcats cruised there. And looking at this game, I think we could see that once again. If Fairfield's not efficient from the field, it's really going to set Quinnipiac up well because they have guys that can deliver under the rim. The biggest one to look at, Amari Tice, he's been fantastic. 7 rebounds per game, 12 points there, just a grinded out, gritty kind of player. And looking at Fairfield, like, they're not that big of a basketball team. Their leading rebounder is a 6'3" guard named Jasper Floyd. 6.2 boards per game is fantastic, but I don't want to see guards leading in rebounding. I want to see big physical dudes, big forwards and centers down low, and they just don't simply have that. And that's the reason Quinnipiac was able to cruise in the last one. So I think Fairfield's ultimately going to struggle, and this is going to turn into Quinnipiac's kind of game, a more physical basketball game, and that's one that they can win. So I'm going to take them to cover at home, 2.5 points.
Yep, this is a very short line that Quinnipiac has to cover, and Quinnipiac hasn't been the most flashy team in the world, but they have been able to cover a lot of these numbers. They've been able to win these games outright. And when you're laying just 2 points like this, you're not asking for a team to do much more than be able to win the game outright. So I am right there with you, Tanner. I'm going to be backing your alma mater. And when it comes to this Friday, as I was alluding to, not the biggest slate, but you know what? We've got some nice Northeast action. We do have ourselves things like Nevada, San Jose State, a team from my home state, UW Green Bay. They're going to be taking the floor as well. Anything else that you are taking a look at for this Friday?
My biggest play was on Quinnipiac -2.5, and then probably the under on that game as well. I'll fire on that eventually tomorrow, seeing how the line moves there. One game that I am looking at as well, Marist against Manhattan. Looking at Marist, they're a 7.5 point favor on the road against Manhattan. And, you know, they've been very good this season in these situations. So going to look to them here. When you see Marist overall, 14-9, 9-5 in the conference, Manhattan's just a 5-19 team. And I don't think 7.5 points is going to be enough for them here. Defensively, Marist is just fantastic. Offensively, these teams are pretty even, but, you know, kind of like a Quinnipiac, similar in the regard that they win on the glass and they play really physical defense. And I think defense is, in college basketball, it's a mentality, right? Like, I was just talking to somebody about Michigan. We were saying like Michigan's given up almost 80 points per game. Michigan's too talented to give up 80 points per game. They just don't have it mentally. They don't turn it on. Where a team like Marist, they want to beat you up in the backcourt, and they've done that pretty well this season. So I think their defense just ultimately swarms a Manhattan team that's really not efficient from the field, only shooting 40%. So if you can't score, you're really going to have a tough time against Marist. I see them probably scoring about 65 points in this game, but still finding a way to cover 7.5.
Yep, Mr. Gallagher over at Manhattan. I like what he was able to do over at Hartford, but man, this is going to be a long rebuild for him. And I do agree with you with Marist. This team is dominant defensively. Only question is whether or not they're going to be able to score enough points to be able to cover this game, because they have been leaving something to be desired there. But you know that you're going to get that defensive effort from them, and you know that you're going to get great information from this man. Tanner, you do such tremendous work over at DraftKings covering a little bit of everything. I know you appear upon a lot of different shows, including my own, the Greg Peterson Experience, a lot of weeks as well. So let the good people know No, it's on tap for you, and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yep, so my main area that I'm posting content right now personally is on TikTok at Tanner Kern. You can also follow me on Twitter at Tanner Kern _. But all of the DraftKings Sportsbook social media page, posting videos on betting trends, just fun sports stories as well. So you can find me there, and then on Greg's show on VSiN, and then the Ride the Line podcast. You can get that where all your podcasts are available.
Absolutely. And Tanner, he does such good work in so many different fronts. I know that when baseball season comes along as well, you want to be checking him out for that. He does a great job on that front. The NFL, the NBA, NHL, college basketball, you name it. Tanner does it, and he always lends such good insight. So big thanks to Tanner for joining me on Cusco Soups, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we eat some baseball.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home, where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home, where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Craig Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It is always great to get Tanner Kern aboard. He does such good work over at DraftKings, taking a look at a little bit of everything. You want football, basketball, hockey, you name it, he does it. He covers it all. And when it comes to baseball season, I know that he's an ace on that front as well. Every single time he joins me, whether that be this podcast or the Greg Peterson Experience, always lends such good insight. So big thanks to Tanner for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter / X feed at GNNR41. We are going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. Pretty much every game is in time order except for the extra game. That would be the game involving North Florida and Jacksonville that is out there in the Atlantic Sun. That is the game that is going to be at the bottom. So that's putting it as cleanly and easily as possible. So let's get things started with 861, 862 on the card. It is Kent State on the road facing off against Akron. Akron is a favorite of 7.5 points. Total on this game is 135. I did set my line at 8.5. I'm going to be willing to lay with Akron. This Kent State team just has not been the same team defensively as they were a season ago. They're well outside the top 125 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. They're just not generating the same amount of turnovers that they did a season ago. And while this is a Akron team that's really been able to rise up with their defense, they're now a top 75 team with regards to points allowed on a per possession basis. This bunch has been able to do a very rock solid job in terms of their offense ever since Ali has gotten in the fold. They've gotten to at least 68 points for pretty much all but two of those games. And you've got Enrique Freeman. He's been able to supply the team down low with 18 points, 13 rebounds, leads all of college basketball with regards to those rebounds per game, chips in there a block and a half per contest for an Akron team that has been very efficient as well. They only turn the ball over about 11.3 times per contest. They don't necessarily have that one guy that's going to go out there and give you like a whole bunch of assists or anything like that, but Caleb Thornton has the ball in his hands quite a bit. He's able to give you about 2.5 assists per contest, and they do go up against a Kent State team that, while they've been slowing down a little bit in conference, this team is still playing at a pretty brisk pace. Akron, they're only about 284th in the country with regards to total possessions per game, but this Kent State team, they've been hovering in that top 125, top 150 all season long, and they've been able to get quite a bit of production out of Chris Payton. Payton has been able to do a solid job, being able to throw in there about 13 points, 8 boards per contest at about 6'8", 6'9". He's been able to give you some relatively good three-point shooting for a bunch that is about 151st in the country with regards to total possessions per game for Kent State. They've got Jalen Sullinger, who's able to give you 14 points, shoots 39.5% from three, and all in all, it is a Kent State team that is a pretty good shooting team. They shoot about 35.5% to 36% from three-point range. They do shoot 76% at the free throw line, and for Kent State, unlike a season ago, this team is really allowing it from three-point. Now, for Akron, they've been a very good three-point shooting defense at 27.7% from distance. That's what teams teams are shooting against them at home. But for Kent State, they do allow you to shoot about 33.5% from three. That does fall to about 31.5% in a roadside shooting court environment. But I do think that with what Akron is able to get down low, and just the way that Kent State in general has been playing a little bit faster, and the way that they have struggled with their defense for much of the season, that does cause for a few red flags. These two teams, they hooked up about a month or so ago in that affair. It was Akron who was able to get the job done by kind of 77-71, and now we've got a total of about 135. That does feel a little bit low. I think that this is going to be a game snug enough for late game fouling. So did set my total 142.5. I'm going to be looking at the over in this ordeal. Now with Akron, made them an 8.5-point favorite, so one delay the 7.5 here with Akron. 863, 864 on the betting board. Dartmouth is going to be playing us a Penn, and the Quakers a Penn. All right, 6-2, 6.5-point favorite. Your total on this game, it is 131. I did set Penn as a 7-point favorite here at the 6-6.5. It's the max I'm going to be willing to lay, but I'm going to be willing to lay it. The Penn numbers are just a little bit warped. They're outside the top 175 in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. They have not been doing the world's most bang-up job on the glass, so they are a top-runner team with regards to their rebound rate, but should be even better because you've been dealing with a pair of big injuries for the team. Clark Slazier, along with Sam Brown, our pair of guys have been out of the fold for quite a while. Both of these guys have missed at least four games this year, and then additionally, you've been without for about nine or so games. Nicholas Polonowski, he's been back in the fold as well, playing on a very limited basis, but he's a 48% three-point shooter. And then Slager, he's a do-it-all sort of player. 17 points, about three assists. He shoots 40% from three-point range for a Penn team as a whole. They shoot 36% from the outside. They do turn the ball over about 11.8 times per contest. But again, we're dealing with a bunch of injuries out there in the backcourt, and they face off against a Dartmouth team that just frankly has not been able to get anything going on offense all season long. This bunch is shooting 29.5% from three. They're a bottom 40 team in the country with regards to points scored on a per possession basis. So I will say they do have a pair of guys down low that do a good job of being able to hit the glass. Susan Deskovich, Brandon Mitchell Day. They've been able to combine for 25.5 points per contest, a little bit over 10 rebounds. But outside of these two guys, you just have not been able to get a lot of production. It is a Dartmouth team that is about 288th in all of college basketball with regards to a rebound rate. So Penn, they should be able to completely dominate on the boards in this one, especially with Nick Spinoso having a very good skill set. He's been able to give the team 3.5 assists. He's been able to throw in there about 7.5 rebounds per game as well, and that I really do like the game of Tyler Perkins as well. Perkins has been someone that has been able to supply the team with 14 points, 5.5 boards, shoots 35.5% from three. Penn has a big advantage on glass. This Dartmouth bunch, they haven't been the world's worst at being able to guard the three-point arc as opponents against them. They do shoot about 29% from three at home. That balloons all the way up to 40% in a roadside shooting court environment, and I do think that we're going to see those numbers iron out just a little bit, especially with Penn now having their full allotment of guys out there on the floor. I do think that that's a very big key in this game, and we have been noticing that while Dartmouth is a bunch that they just don't hold up their end of the bargain with regards to totals, this has been a defense that has been getting quite gashed recently as well. They have now given up at least 72 points in each other last four games, going up against a Penn bunch that they themselves are right now riding a very ugly eight-game losing streak for Penn. It's been a little bit slow going with regards to their offense, trying to get Slager back in the fold, but defense has certainly not been there for them as well. This Penn team has allowed at least 70 points to all but one of the teams that they have played here since the turn of the calendar to 2024, and that team, Dartmouth, when they won that game 80-51, that was their last win. I do think that Dartmouth is able to put up a little bit more than 51, but I do think that with Penn getting their full allotment of guys back out there on the floor, that is going to allow Penn to be able to snap this losing streak. I don't think that they knock off Dartmouth by 29 again, but I do think that they can get a comfortable win. Set Penn as a 7-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the 6-6.5 and did set my total 133, so here's the 131. Also looking at the over. 865, 866 on the betting board. Ryder is playing us Iona. Iona's a favorite of 1-1.5 points. Opener was 2. Total on this game is between 145.5-146. I think the right move is being made. I set Ryder as a 2-point favorite. I'm going to be looking at them. All right, on the money line, this Iona bunch has been very good in terms of generating turnovers. A top 25 team in the country with regards to turnovers forced on a per possession basis. Where they're going to lose this battle, though, is down low. Ryder is a top 110 team with regards to rebound rate. Iona is well outside the top 225. You've got a pair of relatively mid-tempo teams in this one, but for Iona, you got back Osborne Shemba, but he just hasn't given you a ton on the glass. He's only given you about 3-3.5 rebounds per game. As a matter of fact, it's been Greg Gekko-Gordon who's had to be Mr. Do-It-All for Iona. 7 boards, 16 points, shoots about 33% from 3 while generating a steal and a half per contest. And I do like what Joel Brown is able to bring to the table, because I was mentioning the fact that Iona generates a lot of turnovers. He's responsible for about 2 steals per game, only gives you about 6 points per contest, but when he shoots it, he's pretty efficient, shooting about 35% from 3-point range. But for Ryder, you've got a trio of guys that give you north of 6 rebounds per game. Tyreek Ingram, Mervin James, along with TJ Weeks. Weeks and Ingram combined for about 19 points per contest, while Weeks has been able to shoot about 36.5% from 3, and Mervin James, 18.5 points, 6.5 boards, shoots 41.5% from 3-point range. And if you look at Ryder's numbers overall for the season, they're shooting about 34% from 3-point range, which you're probably thinking to yourself, that's about average in all of college basketball. But if you look at conference play and conference play only, that's where they've really been able to shine. As thus far in conference, this bunch has been able to shoot well north of 37% from 3-point range. They've really been able to turn it on after they were a little bit rough when it came to the non-conference portion of the season. You've got on the flip side an Iona team that, while they do have the size of Osborne Chema, they just have not necessarily been able to hold up down low. I do think that for Iona, their best chance is to be able to take advantage of a Ryder team that has been allowing quite a bit from 3-point range. Just Ryder bunch, in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage, they're 232nd in all of college basketball. Meanwhile, you've got an Iona team that, while they do a nice job of being able to generate turnovers, much like a lot of teams that gamble for turnovers, if they don't generate that turnover, they leave you open from 3-point range as well. They're allowing opponents to shoot 34.5% from 3-point range. For Iona, they have been able to get some relatively good production out of some of those ancillary guards, and Aiden Tutout, who's been able to give you about 13.5 points, shoots 33.5% from 3-point range. And then you've got a pair of guys in Javon Quigley, Alon Jean, Era Gruen, hopefully I said that correctly. Both of these guys have been able to combine for about 19 points per contest, and Enron Gurin has been able to shoot 47% from 3-point range. So I do think that there's going to be a lot of made threes, but for Iona, I just don't see a lot of second chances in this game. I do think that things get a little bit sloppy in terms of the turnovers as well, and that's a big reason why I did set my total here at a 144. Plus, you do have an Iona team that has been pretty solid with their defense. 71 points for fear surrender in 3 of their last 4 games, going against a Ryder team that they have given up fewer than 63 points in each of their last 2 games. Certainly, I think they give up a little bit more here, but at the 145.5, looking under semi-total 144, and with Ryder, made them the favorite of 2 points. I'm going to be looking at them outright on the money line. 867, 868 on the betting board. It is Manhattan, and Manhattan is going to be playing us with Marist. Marist is a road favorite of 7 points. Your total is between 134 and 134.5. So Marist has a 6.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take 7 with Manhattan. Now, for Manhattan, this has been one of your least profitable teams in all of college basketball. And man, for Manhattan, it's not great. They're outside the top 275 in terms of both points scored and points allowed on a per-possession basis. They're hovering right around 300th with their rebound rate, but it's not like Marist has been some sort of incredible rebounding team either. Isaiah Brickner has been your top rebounder with 4.7 boards per contest. Marist a little bit better in terms of their rebound rate, but the way that Marist has been able to get it done all season long is through just tough, tenacious defense. They've also been a team that has been in the top 40 with regards to turnovers forced on a per-possession basis, as Marist, in terms of their 3-point shooting defense, 55th in off-college basketball opponents shoot 31.5% for distance. And then they do give up the 3. They're allowing opponents to shoot about 38.5% from 3-point range at home, but well, Marist is really going to be able to knock down those shots. Right now, your top scorer is Max Allen, who's been able to give you about 11.5 points per contest, and I do like the fact that you've been able to get about 11 points out of Josh Passarelli, who's been able to shoot 37.5% from the outside. And then, past that, you've been able to have Javon Cooley, shoots 44% from 3-point range, 6.5 points, 4 boards per contest, but lacking a lot of pizzazz from the outside. Meanwhile, for Manhattan, you've got Shaquille Bender, who's been able to do a nice job, supplying 13 points, shoots about 34% from 3-point range. It is a Manhattan team that does turn the ball over 14 times per contest. They shoot just 31.5% from 3-point range, so it's a very interesting scenario. You've got a Manhattan team that's looking to play a little bit more up-tempo. They're in the top 1 in terms of total possessions per game going up against the Marist team that, if you look at them for the season, well outside the top 280 in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, but they've been able to get past the 75-point plateau in each of their last 2 games, 67-plus in each of their last 3, going against a Manhattan team that has been getting just absolutely bludgeoned on defense. They have now given up at least 73 points in all but 1 out of their last 7 games, so it has been a Manhattan team that's really been giving it up, and I do think that this game is going to be just close enough for some late game falling, which is why I did set my total 134, and I fully recognize that Marist has had a tough time with regards to their defense, but here, because I do think that Manhattan is going to be able to stay with a Marist team that they only shoot about 67-68% of the free throw line, in a late game falling scenario, it's hard to be able to trust in them with regards to the spread. I'm going to be looking at the over in this spot as a result, and also taking a look at the 7 with Manhattan, as I did set them as an underdog of 6.5 points. 869, 870 on the betting board. It is Canisius playing against to Niagara. Niagara does find themselves as an underdog on the road of 1.5 points. So this game is anywhere between 142.5 and 143.5. This Niagara team has been a complete and utter bulldozer on the road, and I'm not going up against them in this one. I did set this Niagara bunch as a 2-point favorite. I'm going to be looking at them right on the money line. It's just absolutely silly in terms of the numbers that we are seeing home to road with Niagara. Niagara is shooting about 32 to 33% from three-point range when they're at home in a roadside shoot-to-court environment. This bunch has been shooting well above 40% from three. They've got like the biggest split in all of college basketball with regards to outside shooting numbers home and road, and they go up against Canisius, unit that they've been relatively okay for much of the season in terms of their three-point shooting defense, but that's starting to falter a little bit. Now Canisius much better at home at being able to guard the three rather than on the road. On the road, they allow opponents to shoot 36.8% from the outside. That's more like 27.6% from three-point range at home. Going against a Niagara team that, while they have been able to make a whole bunch of threes this year, they're going to give you a lot of open looks as well. They're allowing opponents to shoot overall about 34% from three, but they see that fall off to about 30.5% from distance away from home. It's like 37.8% from distance at home. And for Niagara, they do have a dominant big man down low, the 7-footer in Harlan Obiana, about 10 points, 8 boards per contest. Now, he's going to have his hands full, as you've got a top 10 rebounder in all of college basketball in Frank Mitchell, who's been able to average a double-double, 11.3 rebounds, 13 points per game. But Niagara is so stacked with just having so much depth of guys that are able to pop it from three-point range. Among their top five guys that made at least one three this far this season, so that takes Obiana out of the fold, but one of them to shoot at least 37.9% from three-point range. The exception is Ahmad Henderson, who's been your top scorer, being able to supply about 13 points per contest. Luke Bumbleow has been able to shoot about 38% from three, along with Kawhi Marble. These two guys combined for about 18 points per game, and both come in from other schools. Meanwhile, for Canisius, they're looking at their backcourt duo of Siam Ojantel, hopefully I said that correctly, Lontre Dinkins. These two guys, they've been able to do a solid job combining for about 29 points, just under 6 rebounds per contest, but they do turn the ball over about 5 times per game between the two of them. And overall, Canisius, in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis, they are a bottom 100 team in all of college basketball. They are a bunch that they're able to generate a few steals of their own, but neither team in this one is necessarily going to be generating a whole bunch of steals. And when it comes to Canisius, you could really use a little bit more than what you've been getting out of TJ Gadsden. He's been able to give you about 9 points, 4.5 boards, shoots only though about 30% from 3-point range. Canisius going to have a little bit of a leg up on the glass. Other than Obiana, you don't have a ton down low for an Niagara team that is outside the top 210 with regards to rebound rate. Meanwhile, for this Canisius bunch, they've been able to do a relatively solid job in terms of their rebound rate at about 115th, but I do think that even though Canisius has been very good at guarding the outside at home, Niagara, with the way that they've been performing on the road, the way that they've been so consistent all season long, they find a way to get the job done and be able to put some points upon the board. Niagara also outside the top 225 with regards to points allowed on a per-possession basis, facing off against a Canisius unit that they've scored now 71 points or fewer in 12 out of their last 15 games, so it is a situation of something you've got to give, but did set my total at a 146. You've got a Niagara team that has been really launching their offense, so I'm going to be taking a look at them. All right, on the money line, and you're at about a 142.5, 143, you're going to be looking at the over. 871, 872 on the betting board. Cornell is going to be playing. You'll see Yale. Yale finds themselves as 2 to 2.5 point underdog, seeing a straight 1.5 out there as well. Total on this game is 155.5. With Yale, I did set them as an underdog of 2 points. Personally, I would rather lay 1.5 with Cornell rather than take 2.5 with Yale, just because I do think that home court advantage, it is very meaningful, but you've got a pair of teams that are playing exact opposite styles, and I do think that it results in an over. I did set my total at 156, as I do think that this is going to be very much a nip and tuck game. Now for Yale, the defense, it really has been able to come to the forefront. If you look overall for the season, they're not quite as dominant as they were a season ago. In terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, this Yale team, they're clocking in right in the neighborhood about 128th, but they're only giving up about 1.6 points more per 100 possessions when they leave home. And you've got a Cornell unit that they do play a little bit slower at home, but they're a top 75 team in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, and they're only allowing about 2.8 points fewer per 100 possessions at home rather than in a roadside shoot court environment. And as we know with Cornell, this is a holes greater than the sum of its parts unit. With them being able to score north of 80 points per game, it comes with nobody really giving you north of 13.5 points per game. Chris Bannon has been pretty solid, being able to give you double figures. You've got Kyler Boothby, who shoots well north of 40% from three-point range, but it is a Cornell team that they just have a whole bunch of guys chipping in there, a great effort. And for Cornell, they actually do play a little bit slower when they are at home, but it does feel like these games, sometimes they do get a little bit nutty and out of control. We saw the last time around, it was 80-78, and I do think that we could see something similar here. Danny Wolf in the first game, he had 25 5 points, 7 boards, and he's really the leader for this Yale team. He's been able to supply the team with about 15 points. At 7 feet tall, he's able to pop threes at a 37.5% clip. He's been able to give the team about 10 rebounds per game. And what else is interesting about Cornell is that this has been a pretty solid 3-point shooting defense. Meanwhile, it is a Yale team that they can be a little bit hot and cold with the way that they guard the arc. That has really been the one weak point, as Yale's been able to do a pretty solid job on the glass all season long. They should have a nice advantage there, but Yale, they are allowing opponents to shoot about 34% from three. That's 195th in the country, though. That drops to about 33% when they do leave home. Meanwhile, for Cornell, they allow opponents to shoot about 34.5% from three-point range at home. That drops to about 31.5% in a roadside shoot court venue. And you do have guys like August Mahoney, who's able to give you double figures. He's able to shoot 40% from three-point range. You've been able to have Mr. John Poledikas be able to give you 13 points, shoots it well from three. And Matt Noling, who was really the top guy last season, he's still been solid for Yale, not as prominent with Wolf being able to come to the forefront, but 11.5 points, 4.5 boards. He's got a little bit of versatility as well. So I do think that this is going to be a nip and tuck game. I do think that, though, the Cornell is going to be able to do a better job, be able to generate some turnovers against a Yale team that, in their own right, top 30 team with regards to field turnovers on a per possession basis. But I do feel like, just in general, this Cornell team does give this Yale team some fits. So I'm going to be willing to take Cornell in this spot. I did set them as a 2-point favorite right now, seeing a lot of 1.5 since I do this. So one to lay up to 1.5 with Cornell. And with regards to Soto, set mine at 156. So here at the 155.5, going to be taking a look at this total over 873, 874 on the betting board. Mount St. Mary's is going to be playing us to St. Peter's. St. Peter's is an underdog of 2 to 2.5 points. Total on this game is anywhere between 129.5 and 130. And with the mount, I did set them as a favorite of 2.5 points. Circumstance where I'm willing to lay up to 2 with them. For Mount St. Mary's, they've been a very good team at being able to take the ball away. They're a top 50 team in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis. Now, they themselves are turning the ball over a ton, north of 13.5 turnovers per game in terms of their offensive turnovers on a per possession basis. That's a bottom 75 mark in all of college basketball. And for Mount St. Mary's, it's all about being able to do a good job on the glass. The St. Peter's team, they, in terms of their rebound rate, is relatively on par with Mount St. Mary's. Mount St. Mary's, even though they don't have a single guy that gives you north of 5 rebounds per game, they do a good job by committee, ranking right around 72nd in all of college basketball with regards to the rebound rate. And then for St. Peter's, they're clocking in about 71st. So both of these teams very equal on that front, though. St. Peter's does have a little bit more size. I like what Michael Hoagie is able to bring to the table. He's able to give you about 5.5 boards. He's been able to chip in their 7.5 points. But the St. Peter's team, they are dealing with Corey Washington being in and out of the fold. He was able to return in the team's last road trip, and he was able to supply in those two games about 45 points. He should be all good to go in this one. And then for St. Peter's, it is a bunch of, they only shoot overall from the floor 39%. They do shoot 31% from distance, and they're very good at being able to get second chances. That's the main reason why they have been able to get points up on the board this season. A top 45 team with regards to percentage of missed shots that do result in an offensive rebound, and they're about 100th with regards to opponent's 3-point shooting percentage, going up against a Mount St. Mary's team that has Dakota LaFue shooting well from 3 in the mid-30s. He's been able to cut down on the turnovers recently while supplying the team with north of 15 points per contest for the Mount. They are having their issues guarding the arc when they're on the road, but at home this drops down to 30.1%. They've been night and day better with that regard, and you do have some pretty demonstrative home and road splits just overall with this Mount St. Mary's defense. As for the Mount, in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, they are giving up about 8 points fewer when they're at home. They're about 97th overall in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Meanwhile, they go up against a St. Peter's team as 15th in the country with this regard, giving up about 8 points more per 100 possessions when they do leave home, though. And you just don't have a lot of those guys that have been able to step up and give you a little bit of scoring. You were looking at someone like a Mason Randolph coming in for Richard Nittman, and he's been a mid-30s 3-point shooter, but only about 5.7 points per game. Meanwhile, on the flip side for Mount St. Mary's, you've been able to have a pair of guys in Josh Reeves, Sean Montgomery combined for about 19 points. Both guys shoot 37.5% from three-point range. And Mount St. Mary's, they do shoot north of 70% in the free throw line. They've got most of their top guys being able to shoot north of 71% in the charity stripe. And with the way that they've been able to cut down on the turnovers, going up against a St. Peter's team that's just been wretched on offense, 62 points or fewer in 3 of the last 5 games, I do think that the Mount has enough to be able to get the job done. This is a circumstance where I did set Mount St. Mary's as a 2.5 point favorite, one to lay up to deuce with them, and did set my total at 130.5. Mount St. Mary's Cincinnati is now in the upper half of all of college basketball in terms of total possessions per game. I do think that they're going to be able to flow their offense a little bit better as this bunch has been able to get to at least 80 points in three of their last four games. Recognize that they're going to be slowed down a little bit in this spot, but with St. Peter's, I do think that also them being able to get Washington back in the fold, that helps out their offense as well. So, one lay up to a deuce with Mount St. Mary, so one to lay the two, and you're at a 129.5 to 130. Going to be looking at the over semi-total, 130.5. 875, 876 on the betting board. Fort Wayne, it's the road they're facing off against UW-Green Bay. UW-Green Bay is between a 2.5 to a 3-point favorite with your total 140. I said Green Bay is a 2-point favorite, so now that we're getting up to 2.5, 3, that is going to be my buy point on Fort Wayne. Fort Wayne, not quite the same team in terms of generating turnovers on the road rather than at home, but this is still a squad that is a top 50 team in all of college basketball with regards to turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. As a matter of fact, they're a top 30 team with that regard, and for Fort Wayne, they do have a lot of guys that are able to do a nice job of being able to stroke it from three-point range. This UW-Green Bay team, they've been pretty solid all across the board, but now they go up against a Fort Wayne team that they shoot 37.1% from three-point range in a roadside shoot score venue. That's a top 50 mark in all of college basketball with Jalen Jackson, Quentin Morton Robinson combining for 29.5 points, both combined to shoot about 43.5% from three. And Rashid Bello, someone who began his career out there in the great state of Wisconsin at D2 UW Parkside, he's been very versatile. 2 steals, 4 assists, 15 points per game for a Fort Wayne team that does a good job taking care of the ball. They're only turning the ball over about 10.5 times per contest. Now for UW Green Bay, they've been a pretty good perimeter defense all season long. 18th in all of college basketball in terms of opponents' 3-point shooting percentage, allowing opponents to shoot just 27.4% from distance at all. Meanwhile, Fort Wayne, they're 77th with this regard. So both teams, I think, are going to have a little bit of a tougher time than normal of being able to stroke it from 3-point range. But UW Green Bay has been able to crank up the tempo a little bit more. And while you've got that top scorer in Noah Reynolds, who does it all, 4.5 assists, 19.5 points on 35% three-point shooting. You now have Foster Wonder shooting 40% from three. You've got David Douglas, who's shooting 39.5% from the outside. Heck, Elijah Jones, who's really the lone guy on the roster that gives you a north of 6 rebounds per game. He's been able to give the team 8.6 half boards. He's shooting 52% from three-point range, and I do think that part of the issue for UW Green Bay is going to be the fact that other than Jones, you really don't have that primary rebounder. Now, I will say for UW Green Bay, despite the fact that you only have one guy that's able to give you north of 4.5 rebounds per game, them being 114th with regards to a rebound rate, that's pretty impressive. They've actually got the leg up with that regard. This is a Fort Wayne team that's well outside the top 175 with regards to a rebound rate. As a matter of fact, they're in the bottom 50 in the country with regards to their rebound rate. But I do think that Fort Wayne going to be able to get a little bit of something here out of Eric Mulder, who's been able to give you about 6 half boards per contest. I like Andre Roberts, what he's been able to bring to the table. And with Fort Wayne's ability to be able to force some turnovers against a UW Green Bay team that they have been turning the ball over 12 times per contest, I do think that Fort Wayne going to hold in there. And I do think that they're going to turn defense into offense as Fort Wayne playing at warp speed, top 50 mark in all of college basketball with regards to total possessions per game. And don't sleep on this Green Bay offense that has now been able to get to at least 77 points in 4 out of their last 5 games. So it is a total that I did set at a 146. I'm looking at the over of Green Bay. Can I make them a 2-point favorite? So we'll take the 2.5 here with Fort Wayne along with the over. 877, 878 on the betting board. Brown, it's a road face-off against Columbia. What can Brown do for you? Well, they lose by 3 points or fewer, they'll make you money. They're between a 3 to a 3.5 point underdog. Totals between 146.5 and 147. Make Columbia a 5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number. Columbia as a whole shooting north of 38% from 3-point range. They're in the top 35 in all of college basketball in that regard. Going up against the Brown bunch, that they've just really not been the same team defensively as they have been in the past. They're hovering right around 200th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. And away from home, they're allowing opponents to shoot north of 35% from 3-point range. Brown, it just feels like it's a little bit one-dimensional. You've got Kalu Enya along with Nana Owusu-Anane. These two guys have been able to supply you with about 14 rebounds per game going up against Columbia unit that they've got a little bit of size. Blair Thompson, he's done a solid job being versatile in general for this team. 5.5 boards, chips in there about 8.5 points at 6'8". He's been letting it fly at about a 43% clip from 3-point range. And for Brown, they do have a little bit of a leg up with that regard. Brown, in terms of their rebound rate, they're clocking in right in the neighborhood of about 134th. But other than what you've been able to get in the backcourt out of Keno Lilly Jr., 19 points per game from 3-point range, that has fallen off to about 34. 44%, but that's because he's shooting on volume. You really don't have anyone else to be able to help you out. Meanwhile, for Colombia, you've got Geronimo Rubio de la Rosa, who's been very good at the point guard spot. Seal and a half, 14 points, shoots 37% from three-point range, all in all for Colombia. They do shoot 38.5% from the outside, while turning the ball over 12 times for contest. With them being a relatively mid-tempo team, that's not too shabby. They go up against a Brown unit that just has not been able to generate a lot of seals this season. Now, to the credit of Brown, they've been playing better defense recently. 72 points of fear surrendered in four out of their last five games, but offense has not come along for the ride. 71 points or fewer in all five. Meanwhile, you've got a Colombia team that's been able to get to at least 72 points in four straight games. So, good old situation of something's got to give. I do think that this is going to be a little bit of a defense-oriented game. Brown, it feels like, after a rough start to the season, realized, hey, we need to slow things down, and they've certainly been able to do so. So, did set my total 145, diving in on the under. Both Colombia did make them a five-point favorite, so want to lay the 3 to 3.5 here as well. 879, 880 on the betting board. Harvard is going to be playing as a Princeton. Princeton is a favorite of between 6 and 6.5 points. So on this game, it is 140. And with Princeton, I did set them as a favorite of 6.5 points. 6 is the max I'm willing to lay with them, but I'm going to be willing to lay it. This Princeton team just does such a good job with the little things. Top 25 team in all of college basketball in terms of both free throw shooting percentage and fewest fouls committed on a per possession basis. And they're also a top 10 team with regards to fewest turnovers on a per possession basis. They shoot 81% of the free throw line with 8.5 turnovers per contest. It's a very top heavy team. You've got pretty much one guy that comes in off the bench giving you 5 points per contest and Allen Davis, and it's a starting five from there. But Xavion Lee, love his game. 5.5 boards, 3.5 assists, 18 points on a mid-30s three-point shooting percentage. Matt Aloko, he has been the guy that's got Aloko from three for the team with 3.5 assists, 13 points, shooting 42% from three. And throwing there Caden Pierce, you've got each of your top three scorers giving you at least 3 assists per contest. Pierce is your main rebounder with about 9.5 boards per contest. And for Princeton, they do a really good job of being able to deny teams a second chance with regards to when they miss on the offensive glass, as you now do have for this Harvard team. Justice Ajabar back in the fold. He's been able to give you about 6.5 boards, 8 points per game, was missing for about like 7 games earlier in the season. Malik Mack, he's your top scorer. He shoots about 38% from 3-point range, 18.5 points per contest, and it's very clear that this Harvard team is much more comfortable at home rather than in a roadside shooting court venue, as you've got Mack shooting 44% from 3-point range at home, well outside of 34% in a roadside shooting court environment. And for Harvard, overall, with regards to their 3-point shooting thus far this season, they are clocking at about 154th in all of college basketball, so they've been seeing a little bit of a fall off there. But for this Harvard team, they do an okay job of taking care of the ball. 12 turnovers per contest, that's relatively average. You've got Chisom Opara, who's been very good, 16.5 points. 5 boards per contest. He has dealt with a little bit of injury as well, but he's good to go in this one as well. But when it comes to this Princeton team, they're pretty solid in terms of just being able to hold up, not wavering from their style. It is a Princeton team that's going to offer you a few opportunities to be able to pop threes, but they're not bad. They allow opponents to shoot about 33.5% from 3-point range, away from home, 32.7% when they're at home. And this has been a Harvard defense that has now clocked in about 200th in the country with the guards' points allowed on a per possession basis. They do allow opponents to shoot 34% from 3-point range as well. So I do think that this is a little bit of a rough matchup for a Harvard team that is not going to be sped up in this game whatsoever, but it's a Princeton unit that they just find a way to execute, a top 75 team in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. I do think that this is going to be close enough for light game fouling. Semi-total at a 142.5, so looking over, and with Princeton, I'm going to be willing to lay up to 6 with them. 881, 882 on the betting board. Toledo, it's a road to face off against Bowling Green. Bowling Green is a home underdog of between 4 and 4.5 points. Toledo's game is 156.5. I made Bowling Green the 4-point underdog. So here at 4.5, I'm going to be willing to take the points. Bowling Green, the better defensive team. Toledo, the better offensive team. And for Bowling Green, they are shooting only about 31% from 3-point range this season. That's a bit of an issue, but they should have their open looks against the Toledo team as 250th in all of college basketball in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage. And for Bowling Green, where they're going to need to maximize in this game is down low, because their perimeter defense has not been great. They themselves are about 319th in all of college basketball with regards to opponent's 3-point shooting percentage, allowing opponents to shoot north of 37% from distance against them when they're at home. That actually drops off when they're away from home. But Bowling Green, they've been able to do a good job with Rashawn Agee along Jason Spurgeon, combining for about 15.5 rebounds per game. Bowling Green, 129th in all of college basketball with regards to rebound rate, going up against a Toledo team that's more around 177th. For Toledo, Tyler Cochran has been able to give you double figure amount of points, 6.5 rebounds per game, but other than that, you really don't have a lot of guys they're able to dominate down low. Now, what is going to be a issue for Bowling Green is that you do have a Toledo team that, as a collective, they are a top 50 team in terms of 3-point shooting percentage at 37.4%, and they really don't turn the ball over a ton. 10.7 turnovers per game And then in the backcourt, you've got a pair of guys in Dante Maddox Jr. along with Raheem Moss, combining for about 32 points per contest. They combine for 3 steals, 5.5 assists, and you got Maddox shooting 41.5% from 3-point range. You've also been able to get a 43% 3-point shooter in Andre Lutkarsson. Hopefully I said that correctly. Getting it going a little bit more, but he's been very hot and cold all season long. But for Bowling Green, they actually have the best scorer in this game. That would be Marcus Hill. Completely incapable of really giving you anything from the outside at about 30% with his 3-point shooting percentage, but 21 points, 5 boards, 2.5 assists. He has been rock solid, and Trey Thomas has been able to take the load off of him in terms of a ball handling sort of perspective. 2.5 assists, shoots only about 32% from 3, but throws in there about 11.5 points per contest. He was missing for 6 games earlier in the season due to injury, and I do think that with Bowling Green cutting down on the turnovers, they're only turning the ball over about 11.5 times per contest. That's going to bode very well for them, and this is a Toledo team that they've really been relying upon gambling for turnovers in order to be able to get their defense going, and it's been a defense that has been very much all over the place this season with Toledo. This bunch has been able to really launch your offense, but that said, if you take a look at them recently, it's been a little bit of a fall for Toledo. They play that just harebrained game against Appalachian State that does warp their offensive numbers, but if you look at them overall, really since the latter half of January, this has been a squad that has, in 2 of their last 4 games, scored 72 points or fewer. Bowling Green really having a tough time getting it going in regulation. They've been held below 65 points in 4 of their last 5 games, so I do think that this is going to be a slowdown slog of a game that Bowling Green is going to hold in because they do a solid job on the glass. I did set my total 154. I'm looking at the under, and with Toledo, made them a 4-point favorite, so we'll take 4.5 here with Bowling Green. 883, 884 on the betting board. Youngstown State, it's a road face-off against UW-Milwaukee. Milwaukee is a home underdog of 2.5 points. Your total on this game, it is 160. I did say UW-Milwaukee as a underdog of 3 points. So here at the 2.5, I'm going to be willing to lay it with Youngstown State. Youngstown State just flat out is doing a better job on defense. UW-Milwaukee is about 320th in all of college basketball with regards to points allowed on a per possession basis. Youngstown State, they're hovering right around 110th, but they're actually giving up about 0.5 fewer per 100 possessions away from them rather than at home. And I like what you're able to get out of the duel of Ziggy Reed along DJ Burns. Burns is your top rebounder, 13 points. It's 7.5 rebounds per game. It's a top 10 mark in all of college basketball. And for Reed, he shoots 39.5% from 3-point. Something else that you like about Youngstown State in this circumstance, each of their top 4 scorers shoot at least 81.8% of the free throw line. That could be of significance late in this game, as for UW-Milwaukee, you've got BJ Freeman, who's been tremendous. 19 points, 6.5 boards, 4 assists, shoots 37% from 3-point range. But when are you going to be able to get outside that? Kentrell Pullen, Eric Pratt, these two guys combined for about 23.5 points per contest. And for UW-Milwaukee, this is a top 150 team with regards to rebound rate, thanks to guys like Ephesian Fields, who's able to give you about 6 rebounds per game. But Milwaukee turns the ball over 13 times per game. They only shoot about 32.5% from 3-point range. And when you're getting completely carved up on defense, that is really not a great combination. UW-Milwaukee is certainly going to be giving up quite a few open looks, as well as Brett Thompson is someone that is shooting just below 40% from 3-point range over the last 2 seasons. He, for Youngstown State, has been able to give you double figures. UW-Milwaukee at home allows you to shoot 36.4% from 3-point range. Youngstown State, meanwhile, they allow you to shoot just 29.8% away from home. That Youngstown defense has been able to travel. I think that it allows them to be able to get the job done in this circumstance. And even though UW-Milwaukee has been playing with their hair on fire, it's been a case where recently we have seen things bogged down just a little bit. This is a UW-Milwaukee team that in regulation has failed to get past the 73-point plateau in each of their last 3 games. And last time these two teams played, it was 77-77 in regulation, went into overtime. So I do think that you've got a total that's a little bit too high, despite the fact that Youngstown State, they have been able to get to the 80-point plateau in each of their last 5 games. But did set my total 157, looking at the under, and I'm going to be willing to lay up to 2.5 with Youngstown State. 885, 886 on the betting board. Fordham is going to be playing against Duquesne. Duquesne is a favorite of 3 to 3.5 points. Total on scheme is 139.5. Made Duquesne a 3.5 point favorite. Here at the 3, I'm going to be willing to lay it. Duquesne's main forte has been their defense. They've got only 2 guys that are really giving you north of 9 points per contest, as you've been able to get good production out of Jimmy Clark the 3rd, along with Dede Grant. Both of these guys combined for about 34 points per contest. They both shoot in the mid-30s from 3-point range, but outside of that, it's been a lot of Andre Seversoff when he's been out there on the floor, because I know he's been dealing with a little bit of injury, and he's been out full for quite a while. When he was out there, he was able to give you about 6.5 points per contest, and he's been able to play recently, but it's been for a very, very limited amount of minutes. You've been able to have Fusani Idrame be able to give you about 5.5 rebounds per game as well, but despite that, pretty much all the backup singers, they're playing good defense. Duquesne, in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, they're in the top 80 in the country. Meanwhile, it's a Duquesne team that they actually shoot better from three-point range away from home rather than at home, going up against a Fordham unit that they are 286th in the country with regards to three-point shooting percentage. You're outside the top 250 with regards to points scored on a per possession basis, and it's a Fordham unit that just in general has not been able to find their sea legs in terms of just being able to have good facilitation out there in the backcourt. You've got a pair of guys in Antrell Charlton along Giafat Metter who have been able to give you about a combined 6 assists per contest. Metter, he's been able to give you 11 points, shoots 36.5% per 3, but all in all, 13 turnovers per game, even though this is a Fordham team that's in the top 75 with regards to total possessions per game. And that's not so great, especially coming against a Duquesne team that they have been able to really lock in with regards to that defense. They have now given up 72 points or fewer in all but one out of their last 11 games with Duquesne, even though they are a team that only shoots about 33% from three. I do think that they're going to be able to do just enough against a Fordham unit that they've been very good at being able to pound the glass with Abdul Sambilia, giving you about 6.5 boards, multiple blocks per contest, but it's a Fordham team that they allow opponents at home to shoot 41.4% from three, and I do think that Duquesne has just enough on the outside to be able to get this one done. I'm going to be willing to lay up to three with Duquesne. And with regards to the total, I did set mine at a 139.5. This was an opener of 138.5. Still seeing straight 139 out there, so at 139 or less, looking at the over, and I'm going to be willing to lay it up to 3 here with Duquesne. 887, 888 is the DK Network write-up pick. Let's hope that there's fewer fireworks with this one. Fairfield is on the road facing off against Quinnipiac. Quinnipiac is a 2.5 to a 3-point favorite. Your total on this game, it is 158.5. My write-up here is going to be on the under. I set my total at a 153. You've got a pair of defenses that they haven't been amazing, but they haven't been terrible, but I feel like that's really the entirety of this, everything with regards to both of these teams. It's not great, it's not terrible, and yet we've got a total that is hovering right around 160 right now, and I just think that that's a little bit out of sorts. This Quinnipiac team is a bit more up-tempo, 51st in the country with regards to total possessions per game, but Fairfield's about 177th, and Fairfield has been much better with their offense this season. Ever since they got rid of Jay Young, things have been very much on an upward trajectory from there, but they're still about 177th in all of college basketball with regards to total possessions per game. You've got a Bobcats team that they're allowing opponents to shoot about 33.9% from three-point range, but you've got a Fairfield bunch that, in a road-slash-shoot court environment, they're allowing opponents to shoot 31.2% from distance. That's 43rd in all of college basketball. Both of these teams just outside the top 100 with regards to points scored on a per-possession basis, with Quinnipiac being 153rd. Now, with Quinnipiac, they do have Savion Lewis. He is the best facilitator in this game. He's been able to supply the team with about 7.3 assists per contest. That is a top-five mark in all of college basketball. Meanwhile, you've got a bunch on the flip side in Fairfield that they've got Bryson Goodine, who's been able to shoot north of 40% from three, supplying you with double figures. Caleb Fields, he's been nice for this team. He's been able to give you about 15 points, or is in there a few assists. So both of these teams, they do have some relatively good guard play, but it is a Fairfield bunch out as well. It's going to cause for some dead possessions. They are 39th in all of college basketball. The guards are turnovers forced on a per possession basis. They themselves can get a little bit sloppy with it. And for this Fairfield unit, it's been a relatively good defense recently. They have given up 68 points or fewer in four of the last five games. Meanwhile, you've got a Quinnipiac bunch. They certainly have been giving it up a little bit more, but still, this is a unit that they've given up 73 points or fewer in all but two of their games in the month of February, and they've given up, for that matter, 73 points or fewer in five out of their last seven games. And going back to the first time these two teams played, it was in very late January, and it was a 66-64 game. Granted, Fairfield shot 5 of 26 from 3-point range. Quinnipiac went 6 of 20 from 3-point range, and Quinnipiac did have 16 turnovers in that game, but I could easily see there being 16 turnovers in this game, and while I do think that the shooting is going to be a little bit more hot, you need 28.5 more points from that game to be able to cash you the over in this spot. I think that's a little bit of an overreaction, so it is a case where my DK Network write-up, it is going to be on this total under, and I do think that Quinnipiac is going to be able to do the better job down low to be able to get this one in. Both of these teams are outside the top 150 with regards to percentage of missed shots that do result in an offensive rebound. But Paul Otinho along with Amari Tice, these two guys are giving you a combined about 23.5 points per contest. You've got Matt Blanich, who's been able to shoot 36.5% from three. He's able to give you about 18.5 points per game. And for Fairfield, Jasper Floyd is right now your top rebounder. He's been amazing. He's supplying the team with 10 points, 4.5 assists, 2.5 steals, 6 rebounds per game on 32% 3-point shooting. But he's also standing right around 6'2", 6'3". So the size advantage is there for a Quinnipiac team as 87th overall, with regards to their rebound rate, while Fairfield, they are well outside the top 200 with this regard, 285th. So I do think the Quinnipiac wins from within. I'm willing to lay up to 5 with them, but write-up pick, think we've gone too far with the total. Going to be looking at the under with the write-up to go along with Quinnipiac. This is last game on the normal Las Vegas betting board before we have one extra game, 889-890. Nevada is on the road against San Jose State. Old San Jose State is a 9.5 to a 10-point underdog with a total between 139 and 140. Semi-line a 9.5. Here at 10, I'm going to be willing to buy in on San Jose State. And it's a San Jose State team that has been ghastly on defense. They are outside the top 275 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Going up against a Nevada unit that they do the little things well. Nevada has been a top 30 team with regards to fewest turnovers on a per-possession basis. You've got a pair of really good guards I like, Keenan Blackshear. He's not a guy that's going to bomb it from three-point range, but does a little bit of everything, right around 15 points. He'll throw in there 6-plus rebounds. He'll also give you about 4.5 assists per contest, a steal and a half. And then Jared Lucas shoots 39.5% from 3, 90% the free throw line with 17 points per contest. But with Nevada, even though they are a team that is going to have by far the advantage with regards to the rebound rate, Nick Davidson, he's your top rebounder with about 7 boards per contest. I do think that San Jose State going to get some good rim protection here from Adrame Dionge, who's been able to give you about 5 points, 4.5 rebounds per game. And for San Jose State, they've got a nice fearsome foursome. Tibet, Groner, Trey Anderson. These are guys with versatility. They combine to shoot about 38.5% for three-point range. They've been able to combine for 23.5 points per game. Myron Amy, a.k.a. MJ Amy, he's done a nice job. He's been able to give the team 15 points, 5 boards, 3 assists, 36% from three-point range. And Alvaro Cardenas gives you 5.5 assists and 2 turnovers per contest. And for San Jose State, they've been pretty clean and efficient themselves on offense. They're only turning the ball over about 10.5 times per contest. It's a San Jose State team as a whole. They do shoot 35% from three-point range. Their defense is actually worse at home rather than in a roadside shoot-to-court venue, so that's interesting to take a look at. But you do have a Nevada team that turns their offense, and just overall, they don't see a massive drop-off when they're away from home, but they do score about 8 points fewer per 100 possessions when they're away from home rather than when they are at home. And while San Jose State is ghastly with regards to their defense when they are away from home, this has been a San Jose State team that they are averaging about 9 points more per 100 possessions at home rather than in a roadside shoot-to-court venue. I do think that San Jose State going to be able to knock down some shots against a Nevada team that, in their own right, they've been a relatively solid 3-point shooting defense, while San Jose State is well outside the top 250 with this regard, and for Nevada, as a matter of fact, 47th of the country with regards to opponent's 3-point shooting percentage. But I do think that for Nevada, despite the fact that they're going to have a little bit of an advantage down the line, I don't think that it's as big as the metrics might indicate, and being able to get 10, going to be looking at those points with San Jose State, and it's at my total 143.5. San Jose State still well outside the top 200 with regards to total possessions per game, but they're faster than they were a season ago, and far less efficient on defense. So looking at the 140 over and looking at the 10 here with San Jose State. Now we get our lone extra game.
The normal betting board picks are complete, but there are some extra games today, so we go into the bonus.
3 at 6, 5, 49, 3 at 6, 5, 50. Jacksonville plays host in North Florida. This is a pick'em game with your total between 140 and 140.5. I said North Florida is 1.5 point favorite. I'm going to be looking at them on the money line. Jacksonville has been dealing with a whole bunch of injuries, and for Jacksonville, it's just been very fascinating to look at this team. They're playing a little bit faster in non-conference play. They have really hit the brakes here in conference recently, though. As a matter of fact, for Jacksonville, they have scored 67 points or fewer in each of their last four games. Now, to their credit, they have given up 74 points or fewer in each of their last four games, but now they have to go up against a North Florida team that has been just a hose with regards to their offense. 77-plus points for their last five games, 74-plus in all five, and you've got Jazz Lanier, who's able to supply the team with about 20 points, shoots 45% from three-point range. You've been able to get relatively good production as well with about 5.5 rebounds, 10 points per game out of Dorian James. Now, North Florida, well outside the top 300 with regards to rebound rate. Jacksonville, they are a top 150 team with this regard, but Jacksonville, they're just going to be bombed from the outside. You've got Jacksonville, 275th in all of college basketball, with regards to opponents' three-point shooting percentage at 35.3%. Now, interesting split. They allow opponents to shoot 39% from three away from home. That goes down to 27% at home. I do think that this is going to iron out a little bit more, and you've got a North Florida team that away from home allows opponents to shoot 39.2% from three-point range, but with Marcus Nyblak currently dealing with an injury, he's been, for Jacksonville, a really nice just go-to guy for so many different things. He's been able to supply the team with about 11 points, 3 assists, shoots 39% for 3. And that's a bit of an issue. You've got Robert McCray, top scorer, being able to supply 17 points per game, and they have been getting back in the fold their main big man in Bryce Workman, who's been able to give you 7.5 rebounds per game. That's part of the reason why Jacksonville has been playing so much more slowly. But for Jacksonville, they do turn the ball over about 14 times per contest. You don't have a ton from the outside. been able to get about 37% three-point shooting out of Zach Bell when he's been out there. As he's been a little bit in and out of the fold, should be good to go in this one. But I do think that with North Florida, they are going to be able to do a good job with their guard play. I think that Jacksonville's home and road splits are just very much warped in general. I do think that North Florida, with them being able to knock down a few shots, is going to take Jacksonville out of their game, which is why I did semi-total at a 143.5, looking at the over. And North Florida made them a 1.5-point favorite, so going to be willing to take them on this pick-up line. And that'll wrap things up for the Friday edition of Coast to Coast Heaps, now part of the Visa Family Podcast. Big thanks to Tanner Kern of DraftKings for joining me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Heaps, you're able to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment, idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways to be able to throw those in. First one is my Twitter /XTimeline, @GDN_81. Keep in mind, letters CM, maybe does not matter. So as per usual, please send these into the timeline. Other way, it's fine in an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire and whatever you'd like here on this podcast by the Fats RV coming at you guys every single day. Join the college basketball season that is coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hi, listener. I'm Carol Fisher, the host of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister. I'm so excited for you to hear the brand new season where we're uncovering a 35-year-old mystery. But for those of you who didn't hear season one or just want to listen to it again, you can now get access to all episodes of that first season of The Girlfriends 100% ad-free through the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription, which is available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get access to every single episode of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, ad-free and 1 week early, only available to iHeart True Crime Plus subscribers. So what are you waiting for? Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.